TV. TV. Television.
Okay, TV.
Get it together.
Okay, TV. Now you're just mocking me.
Well,
now you are actually mocking me right now. Because
it was my idea that you shouldn't plug your headphones in until after the theme music started.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. You are mocking me now by doing the theme song and coming in late.
No.
On your bit.
You said, yes, no, right. I wasn't coming in. I was timing it right. I was doing my syllables differently. Because you said last week that I need to be mixing it up. So
you came in late.
I didn't.
On the thing. And here's why. This is the theme of today. The theme of today is you are making me run behind schedule all day long.
Yes.
The
co-theme of that is I didn't know there was a schedule.
There is one.
Until just now.
There's always a schedule.
So this is a podcast.
There's a schedule every day.
This is a podcast of the television. I'm Alonzo Duraldi.
I'm Dave White.
And
every day there's a schedule.
And Dave White is full of beans today.
No, I'm not. I'm full of impatience for my husband, who is...
You're being snappish
I got home,
and borderline mean I got, over a schedule no. that I didn't even know was happening.
I got home from the laundromat, and I was like, are you ready to do things?
And I was doing actual paying work. Sorry.
You know what? But then you weren't ready, and then you weren't ready, and now we're late. And
yeah,
so,
again, late because of a timetable that was in your head that
I,
it was
no,
not shared with me.
I said it out loud in front of you, but you weren't listening
But
to
not
me.
To me. You said it to someone else, and it was a conversation that I wasn't part of, so I just went and tuned right out.
Every word out of my mouth is important for you to listen to all the time. Every word.
Oh, my God.
Listen, how are... How are you going to know how to live your life if you aren't?
If I'm not listening to you and doing the opposite, you're
if
right.
You're paying,
how could I possibly?
Exacting attention to everything I say. When I speak, your world should come to a stop. And you should take note in your personal at a glance, which is apparently your telephone. And think to yourself, now there's an important... Dave White is speaking.
This is not a comedy podcast.
Something important.
This is not a comedy podcast. This is a television podcast. So please change gears because you're killing me with your nonsense. And your hilarious talkings of garbage.
I had a lot of things... I have a lot of things planned in my day. Earlier, I was doing some of them. Washing your dirty clothes.
Yes, thank you.
That's right. And now, we're supposed to be podcasting of the television.
Yes, we are.
But we're an hour and 12 minutes late.
Again, on a schedule that was never printed and handed to me or conveyed to me directly.
Why don't you explain why we're here?
We are
since I'm not going to win this, even though I'm right.
No, not even close. You weren't even on the same board as right. Like I'm on Monopoly and you're playing Sorry.
I will never play Sorry.
Sorry. We are here to talk about television, and there's so much of it, as always.
Right. And we finally got some watched today, so
yes.
We could do this podcast.
Well, we got our...
Even though you were really late.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
We got our ongoing weekly dose of Jessica Jones and Making a Murderer. But at the same time, we also checked out some of the audition sequences of the last season of American Idol. And I watched Angel from Hell.
Some things.
And Sherlock the Abominable Bride.
What is that? I don't even know what that is.
We had a request.
What is that?
You know how the British shows do their Christmas special and it's a big thing? And
yeah.
Okay, so you know Sherlock, the new Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes, which I have seen like three.
Yeah. I've seen one or two.
Because they're movie length almost.
Each episode's 90 minutes.
Yeah.
This was a... The premise is it's like Sherlock only in Victorian times.
I thought that...
So in other words, it's basic. Well, because the Sherlock show is set in the modern day.
Oh, that's right. It is.
Yes.
Forgot about that.
So this one was set in the like actual Arthur Conan Doyle Sherlock Holmes era, which is kind of pointless.
So he is his modern self, and goes back to.
No. It's complicated how they get there and why they're there. But no, it's all taking place as though it were. Almost all taking place as though it were of the era, which is kind of pointless in a way. It's sort of like, oh yeah, we're doing my...
What if he did it traditionally?
It's like saying we're doing My Fair Lady without the music. Well, that's Pygmalion.
Right.
The whole shtick of Sherlock is that it's in the modern day. And
right.
So to do it old school just means you're doing the umpteenth Sherlock Holmes adaptation.
Right.
But it's the umpteenth Sherlock Holmes adaptation with this cast that you've gotten to know as modern people wearing funny mustaches.
Are they speaking in the olden times manner?
Ish.
Or are they speaking
it's olden
2015.
Olden right. times with occasional breaks. It was fine. You know, I have never made the leap into why people love the new Sherlock. I mean, I get what's appealing about it, and I've liked the ones I've seen, but
I've enjoyed the two or three that I've watched.
Yeah, but not. I haven't liked it so much that I've kept
but it
up.
Was so long ago, I forgot that it took place in the modern day.
So this was their big Christmas special, and I think it was actually...
Was it a Christmas mystery?
There's not really much Christmas in it. The thing about the Christmas specials is that they don't... Like, the Christmas Doctor Who this year was barely Christmassy.
Whereas I see.
Last year had, you know, Nick Frost as Santa Claus.
Correct.
Super Christmassy.
Right.
I get the appeal of Sherlock, not so much that I actually keep up with it. And so it was kind of fun to see them doing it in the old school, you know, Deerstalker cap and, you know, thing. And it was very sort of self-referential in that... You know, Dr. Watson is always writing up these cases as, you know, like stories that appear in the magazines or whatever. So the various people involved, like, you know, Mrs. Hudson and Inspector Lestrade are always complaining about how they're being portrayed in the Watson versions of the things that are going on. You know, so that was kind of funny. It was fine. It was okay. You know, I think it was probably, I'm sure if I were a bigger fan of the show, there would have been more... fan service for me, you know, like I would have.
I don't like that expression,
but it's a thing.
I know, but I don't like it.
There would have been more.
I'm annoyed that it exists, and I'm annoyed that people now expect it as though it is their right.
Well, but that doesn't make the phrase bad. You don't like the idea of it.
That's what I mean. I don't like the idea of it.
Okay. Well, anyway, I suspect there were probably some shout outs that I would have caught had I been. An actual fan of Sherlock. But it was fine. It was good, you know.
It was fine. It was good.
It was fine.
Is it?
I didn't feel cheated at the end of it.
I will...
I think they did a...
Would you feel cheated?
Because I gave it 90 minutes of my life. I think they might have done like a theatrical one-night screening of it in the U.S. Like in 3D, maybe? I forget.
No.
No,
I don't want to ever do that.
That's different.
I need a break from Benedict Cumberbatch.
Hmm.
There are people. Let me start that sentence over again. There is a phenomenon of an actor hitting a sort of critical mass.
Sure.
Where.
Like when Anne Hathaway, after Les Mis, went away for a while because she knew we'd all had quite enough.
That was not my feeling about her.
Okay.
I've never felt like I've gotten too much Anne Hathaway.
Hmm.
I like her. I never OD'd on her. And I don't feel like the movie studios and TV programmers pushed her on us. I feel like her situation was entirely different. I feel like she... had the audacity to be a high school drama club person in public. She's an actress.
Yeah.
And you've met actresses and actors.
Mm-hmm.
And there are those that are good at hiding their...
actorness!
Their actorness.
Yes.
And pretending to be, you know, a real chill bro all the time, like Jennifer Lawrence.
Mm.
And then there are those who are less capable of that. And you would have thought that by Anne Hathaway not really concealing that part of herself to the world, that she had committed some sort of crime and needed to be punished for it. She has done nothing wrong.
Punished with an Oscar.
Yeah, she has done nothing. No, but that Oscar didn't do anything. It didn't do anything to making people love her anymore.
No.
It made the media decide that it was a fun thing to pick on Anne Hathaway. Here's what I think happened. She crossed somebody somewhere.
Mm.
Someone in the media took a dislike to her for something that she said or did or some perceived slight that she probably doesn't even know about. You know, oh, I met you and then I met you again at a party and you didn't know who I was. You know, I'm going to get her.
I think you're giving the media too much power.
I don't think I am, because I think that all you have to do is be at an influential site and have a saucy enough editorial voice.
Right.
that
you rewrite the narrative.
You could start the ball rolling.
I guess
you could start actor hate rolling. Like, all you have to do, I'm not saying BuzzFeed has done this or participated in this, but all you have to do is say, how annoying is Anne Hathaway? 17 pictures of all those times she was super annoying. Go.
Right.
And then it becomes a thing. And then people pass it around on Facebook, and it becomes a thing. The world didn't just decide en masse that we all hate Anne Hathaway. It became an internet phenomenon, disliking Anne Hathaway. Why? Because she's too Anne Hathaway-ish.
Well, that aside, though, she was one of those people who, up until the moment that she, like, stepped back for a bit, was fairly frequently in things.
Right. But again, not excessively. Like, we didn't get an onslaught of Anne Hathaway. We got kind of an onslaught of Benedict Cumberbatch. In the same way that before she was really well known, remember we had like 7 Jessica Chastain movies in a year?
Right.
Not her fault. They just all got released at the same time.
Now it's Donald Gleason.
Yeah. But she hadn't reached a point of visibility in the public eye yet.
Right.
The film critics were taking note of so much Jessica Chastain.
Yeah, I mean, people...
By the way, this is a woman named Jessica Chastain.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I'm sure that... Yeah. And if you were only half paying attention, you wouldn't necessarily recognize that, you know, that blonde southern lady from The Help was also, you know, Mrs. Coriolanus or whatever.
Right.
You know?
And so... But I think, you know, there are people that it happens to, and we want them to go away after a while. I think it happened to Jack Black.
Mm.
It happened to Zach Galifianakis.
Oh, he's about to come roaring back with an FX show.
It happened to Seth Rogen. You had a lot of him for a while.
Yeah.
I feel like it's happening to I feel like it's happening with Benedict Cumberbatch right now, and I don't dislike him at all. This has nothing to do with your Anne Hathaway interjection. I was sort of dismissing that as what I was talking about.
I understand.
I'm talking about so visible, so everywhere that I could stand a little vacation.
I don't know though. I mean, because in the last couple of years, I mean, he's on Sherlock, which we don't watch. He was in the Star Trek movie. He was in Imitation Game. He's about to be in Doctor Strange, so that hasn't even started shooting yet that I know of. But what else? What are you thinking about?
This is all subjective.
You just feel like you've gotten too much.
This is all subjective. In the 80s, I remember thinking I could never... I could comfortably go the rest of my life without watching another Robin Williams movie. I remember thinking that about him in the 80s.
Yeah.
Gene Hackman, I felt like that about for a while. It felt like he was in everything.
Well, that was that joke in PCU, the Hackman Kane rule, that every movie on cable has either Michael Caine or Gene Hackman.
But what I mean is, like, I felt that way too.
Sure.
And so there are just, you know, it's not that I dislike these people or their work or their faces.
Right.
But there are times when I think, okay, you, it's your vacation time.
What about
A year or two. Go take a break.
What about,
go do something.
What about Academy Award winner Eddie Redmayne?
His moment is coming. Like, he's on an uphill climb of, I'm seeing a lot of you lately.
Gotcha.
Also, I'm seeing a lot of you around town. And that's a whole other different phenomenon because we live in Los Angeles.
I was going to say, that's not his fault.
Yeah, that's not his fault. But it was kind of like that time when Christina Ricci was everywhere I went.
Oh, she was stalking you.
Yes. Yeah. And then she disappeared. Like, she moved. Mm-hmm. Obviously, she lived in this neighborhood for a while. And then she moved away.
Well, I think, is Alicia Vikander the new Jessica Chastain?
Not yet. No.
The new Jessica Chastain in terms of having done a lot of stuff.
She's fixing to be in everything.
Still not quite.
Yeah, probably. Now we just completely went off the topic of television.
Oh, horrors.
Onto the topic of film stars.
Should we talk about the Golden Globes then? That was on this week.
Why not? I barely watched them. I was home, and I actually don't care.
I was live tweeting them because it's been a...
Thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
I got like 8 new Twitter followers because you live tweeted the Golden Globes.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a cycle where I did it once and I got a bunch of new followers out of it. And I was like, oh, I guess I'll do it now. But I could very happily skip it because here's the thing. Not only is it pointless, even by award show standards, but it has become self-aware, you know, like Skynet has become cognizant. It is constantly telling you how meaningless it is. I mean, you've got Ricky Gervais, whose entire shtick now is to get up there and talk about what a waste of time this all is and how the Hollywood Foreign Press Association is a joke. You have the people giving the awards and even often receiving the awards not taking it seriously.
Right.
Which then, you know, Ben and Meredith and I talked about it on What the Flick this week, which then makes it weird when somebody gets up there and actually does take it seriously.
When Lady Gaga cries.
Yeah, when Lady Gaga cries. When Brie Larson thanks the HFPA with no irony whatsoever.
Right.
You know, the woman from Rachel Bloom from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend was clearly thrilled.
They haven't decided yet as a group. The popular kids haven't decided yet how they're going to treat the nerds.
No, but I'll tell you, but the Hollywood Foreign Press are the nerds that laugh loudest when the popular kids make fun of them.
Exactly.
It was
one of your most popular tweets from the other night.
Actually, it wasn't. It was one I was proudest of, but it didn't get a lot of play.
Maybe you need to have more lunches with the Hollywood Foreign Press.
I guess
your tweets will become more popular.
That's right, yes. Offer myself up for selfies.
I remember that time there was that little documentary special on the Hollywood Foreign Press.
Yes. Hollywood's Dirty Little
was
Secret.
Was it on Trio? Was it Trio? On the Trio channel?
I missed Trio. Yeah. They were
what did
great.
Trio become?
I think it kind of got folded into Bravo.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Trio did the Christmas special, which was so great. And then the Golden Globes, Hollywood's Dirty Little Secret.
Well, I remember watching that and thinking, whoa, I'm so glad I'm not in the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, because that documentary special made them look like the most vacuous bunch of idiots.
Yeah.
And maybe they are, and maybe they aren't. I don't know. I don't know any of them. Do we know anyone who's in the Hollywood Foreign Press Association?
I know somebody who was and then isn't anymore because he's not a journalist.
What did he leave to go do?
He's a producer now.
I see.
Mike Goodridge. And then
he was in for a while,
and so was I don't know if he still is Emmanuel Levy, but those are the only people that I knew.
But he teaches.
Yeah, no, he's a scholar. He's super legit.
He's a professor in a long time.
He's not in it for lunch with John Travolta,
right? And so so it stands to reason that there are a significant number of people in the Hollywood Foreign Press Association who are legit journalists.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are not. And so...
Or there are, I mean, you know, here's the thing, as I think Peter DeBruges pointed out when he was writing about it in Variety, he said, if there are 90 people, how many votes does that take for a winner? Like 19?
Right.
You know, and when you're in a group where your financial well-being is directly tied into the annual success of your TV show,
right,
and who you get to come beyond that TV show,
correct,
that's obviously going to start coloring things. I mean, even the Academy, which everyone for some crazy reason thinks is this sort of august body that doesn't, you know, isn't so easily swayed the way those Hollywood foreign press
they
types
totally
are.
They
totally are.
If they weren't, then there wouldn't be those
the whole
events that we are invited to frequently where, you know, meet the cast of blah, blah, blah,
oh, yeah,
and have hors d'oeuvres, you know.
And well, yeah, that, and they wouldn't have expanded the number of Best Picture nominees if they weren't worried about how no teenagers were watching their show if all
right
they were going to see was the King's List.
Right.
That they had to expand the numbers in the hopes of getting, like, you know, Avatar and, you know, some Pixar movie up for Best Picture.
Lord of the Rings,
exactly. Right. You know, so, I mean, what I kind of got out of watching the Golden Globes this year was the sort of realization that, yeah, these are all ridiculous. And if the people on this show are going to spend this show mocking this show, they're really just undermining the whole thing. Because if the Golden Globes are this stupid, then who's to say the Emmys and the Oscars are any less stupid just because instead of being voted on by 90, entertainment writers from Italy and France, you know, they're voted on people who are within the industry and thus have their own particular set of biases and abilities to be swayed by reasons that have nothing to do with quality of the product.
Right. It, as I watched along with you, I started thinking, If some of y'all are going to mock it openly, even as you're getting an award, and some of y'all are going to cry and take it super seriously, and the host has been hired specifically to shred people, including the organization.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm looking at anymore.
Well, yeah,
other than a fun opportunity to watch Taraji P. Henson
hand out cookies
and be a little tips.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
That's why people tune into that show, is because the champagne keeps flowing and everybody in the room gets, what did Wendy Williams say, turnt?
Is that what she said?
I think she might have.
All I know is that those plates of macaron were not being eaten.
I know.
And that enrages me.
but if the show...
Eat the desserts.
If you're watching a show that keeps telling you how pointless it is, then why are you watching it?
Did Taraji P. Henson bring her own cookies?
Were there
cookies on the tables?
Her cookies
looked like homemade. Like, she made some homemade cookies and brought them with her in her purse, right?
They looked like they were from Archway or something. They looked very unfabulous, whereas the macaron, obviously, were, you know.
I want that she brought her own cookies.
Yeah, I doubt
if
it.
I win, I'm handing out cookies.
Wouldn't that be fantastic? I think she brought her own cookies, but
it
I think...
make me love her even more.
But I think they came from Costco. I don't think she made them or...
I don't care if she made them or didn't make them.
Okay.
I want to know that she brought them with her.
I bet she absolutely brought them with her.
That's the best.
Because it's cookies moment.
I want it to be true. I don't want there to have been cookies on the tables. I want that she brought... She had a little Trader Joe's bag.
Yes.
And she brought them.
Well, because if there were cookies on the table, why bother handing them out if everybody already had them?
Because no one was eating them.
Well, yeah, true. I'm sure she had her assistant went around and collected them during the commercial break.
Can I have that cookie? Are you going to eat that? Of course not.
I've got to get it out of my sights. A carb.
So you watched Angel from Hell, but I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. It's cute.
Yeah.
It's the kind of premise where, sometimes you watch a pilot and you think, okay, well, that would be an all right short film, but where does it go from here?
Right.
I have no idea where this thing is going. Like, in the pilot, Jane Lynch surfaces as this sort of bizarre woman who keeps insinuating herself in the life of this female doctor who's the lead character.
Right.
I forget the actress's name. And eventually Jane confesses that she's the guardian angel of this doctor, and sets about trying to prove to her that basically the doctor's shiftless boyfriend has been unfaithful with the doctor's best friend.
Who's the shiftless boyfriend?
I don't think we see him again. He might be that guy from The Office who we just saw in 13 Hours.
Oh.
The dude who Pam didn't marry.
Okay.
I think it's him. I'll have to look.
I see.
Anyway.
It's
got Worst Week on it.
I don't know his name.
Kyle Bornheimer.
I see him and all I think is, hey, Worst Week.
Worst Week. Kyle Bornheimer. He's charming.
I like that dude. And he's so funny on Worst Week. And
yeah.
Worst Week, if there's a way to see the one season that Worst Week...
It might be on like Netflix or something.
...was on the air. If you have access to seeing... The American, it was a British TV show first, right?
I think so, yeah.
And then they made an American version. It lasted one full season,
I think.
Ish.
Yeah, yeah.
So funny,
very funny.
And
Kurtwood Smith played the father-in-law,
No one watched it. It was canceled, and we were addicted to it.
Yeah.
Every week, if you have the chance, watch Worst Week.
It's very fun, comfortable.
Yeah,
because the whole show is about this guy's just like
one
stepping
disaster
in
after
it,
another.
You know?
Yeah.
Worst Week is on it. It's a fine, it was an okay pilot. But again, it was the kind of pilot where you think, I would watch this again. I can't imagine what it's going to be about. I don't know how you make a show out of this, but, you know. So I guess now this doctor knows that she has a guardian angel. So Jane Lynch is just going to still be around meddling and stuff. But we'll see.
Did you do your What the Flick about Downton Abbey yet this week?
Yes.
Any extra thoughts on Downton Abbey?
Not a lot. Not a lot happened this week.
No, it felt like a lot of plot.
Yeah, and even not down. Yeah, not
nothing super exciting.
Not much advancement. Basically, it's like
except for Daisy.
Well, yes,
announcing to anyone who will listen that the class system in England is inherently corrupt and broken, and that the lovely, sympathetic Cora is part of that system and perpetuates it.
Yes.
And must listen to Daisy.
Yes. And she feels bad about it, but she can't do anything.
I feel bad about it, but I don't know that there's anything I can do.
Yeah, there is.
It's terrible, of course.
Mary is going to get Anna to her, you know, lady parts doctor so she can have babies with Bates.
Right.
Basically all we talk about every week is how great Lady Edith looks now and she needs to just get to London and stay there. And hire a female editor so that this...
But you're right. I was trying to think of... I was thinking of this earlier today, like, what happened on... Happy this week.
Did Marigold goes missing for 2 seconds?
Yeah, that was a tragedy.
We did have a conversation about why. We were trying to figure out like why they can't just tell the farmer's wife. And apparently, I was reminded by
why can't they just tell the farmer's wife that Marigold is Edith's kid?
I was reminded by viewers that they did tell her that, and she didn't believe it last season
because no one would want to have sex with Edith.
I don't remember the details. I'd have to dig that up. But apparently they informed her last season that Marigold was actually Edith's child and she didn't buy it somehow.
Oh, hey, by the way, that thing we told you before that you didn't believe, still true. Your belief in the thing that is a fact is irrelevant.
Exactly.
This is like evolution.
And global warming.
You can say you don't believe in evolution. That doesn't mean it didn't happen. It means that you are disregarding facts about the world.
Speaking of which, the State of the Union aired last night, and that is television.
Yeah, I guess it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I didn't watch it.
The big line...
I never watch States of the Union. I never watch any of that.
One of the big lines that you probably heard was Obama talked about how we need to have an initiative equal to, you know, the space program that's dedicated to combating climate change.
Yes.
And he said that when the Russians sent Sputnik up, we didn't deny they had done it.
Did he say anything else that I would like?
He acknowledged that he wished he had done a better job of...
inviting me to the White House?
Yes. He mentioned you by name. No, I think he said that he wished that he'd been more of a uniter, you know, and that they had done something about just the brokenness of the system of gerrymandering and I don't know if he also would have included, you know, Citizens United under that umbrella, but basically just said that the politics is a mess, and that you know, if he'd been a better orator, maybe he could have fixed some of it. You know,
he's a pretty good orator.
He's pretty good,
and I don't see how he could have been a uniter. His presence is inherently, you know, repellent to racists and stupid people.
Yes, there is that,
and all Republicans who would use his difference
to get the votes of racists
and stupid people.
But even Nikki Haley, who gave the Republican response, and as Rachel Maddow reminded us last night, the past Republican responses included, the first one was by Bobby Jindal,
right,
who totally blew it. He talked about how the government was wasting money on volcano monitors, and then 2 days later, a huge volcano erupted.
Right.
You had what's-his-face from Virginia, who is like currently facing jail time,
yes.
Bob McDonough, I think.
Yeah.
You had a Marco Rubio constantly reaching for the water bottle. Remember that one?
Yes.
But Nikki Haley, although she was a little, it was weird how little she blinked. But she made a point basically saying that, yes, politics are broken right now and Republicans are part of the problem.
Right.
Which is rare because Republicans never cop to being part of any problem or having ever done anything wrong or any mistake whatsoever. I mean, like, remember at the end of Bush's 8 years, they asked him, like, you know, what mistakes he thought he'd made, and he basically said, well, you know, hiring certain people or something like that. It's like, right. Oh, my God! So, yeah. So, it was an interesting evening. I mainly watched the punditry afterwards on MSNBC than the speeches themselves.
Right.
I'm like Tom Townsend in Metropolitan. I would rather read a good literary criticism than the novel itself when it comes to political speeches.
Have you caught up on Transparent?
Yes, I'm done. I got all the way.
You're all the way caught up on Transparent.
I'm all the way caught up on Transparent. It's really extraordinary. I look forward to being able to talk to you about it. Season two.
What if I watch it and I don't want to talk to you about it?
I'll just have to live with
it. How are you going to live with that?
I'll manage. There are other people about with whom I can talk about Transparent. You ain't.
We
so
kind of have this show where it's our job to talk about it with each
That's
other.
That's true.
So I guess I gotta.
It would be awkward if you didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. They take this narrative gamble in the second season, where I was kind of like, why, but then once it involves flashbacks to 1930s Berlin.
Right.
But once it all comes together and is sort of, you know, brought into the narrative, it's like, oh, God, that's really, that it raises a lot of interesting questions and just a lot of sort of character stuff. And yeah, it's really gorgeous. You should definitely check it out.
Well,
and apparently also, according to the Hollywood Foreign Press Association on Amazon, we should be watching Mozart in the Jungle.
Maybe.
They gave it, like, best show over all these other shows, and, you know,
I don't know.
They gave Gael Garcia Bernal best actor in a comedy.
I'm going to I may eventually start watching it, but if I do, I think I already know how I'm supposed to watch it.
Mozart?
Yeah.
How?
Well, anyone who is listening who happens to read the Washington Post may read the classical music and opera critic Anne Majette in that paper. She used to write about classical music and wrote about opera for the New York Times. And she's been doing one of those papers or the other. She's been doing this for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
She sat in front of me and junior English in high school. We used to pass notes back and forth to each other. I know this is weird. I know it's a weird fact, you know, that two people who were high school friends and who literally sat next to each other and, like, went on to do essentially similar jobs in opposite sides of the country with different, you know, subject matter.
Kurt Holman and I were best friends in college, and he's a writer and editor in Atlanta.
You're right. Now. But somehow high school feels a lot more
random.
Random, yeah. So anyway, obviously, I keep track of Anne.
Mm-hmm.
She's my old friend. But she's also a really great writer about classical music and opera.
Has she been writing about Mozart in the Jungle?
She did write about it. And she admits to watching it as a kind of a trashy, pleasurable show.
Okay.
But she wrote a piece about how the media, film and television...
always gets classical music wrong?
They always get classical music wrong. In the same way that they always get the art world wrong.
Well, and probably the law and medicine as
and
well.
Law and medicine. They get everything wrong. And so... But I'm speaking specifically about these two branches of the arts.
Uh-huh.
You know, the contemporary visual art world.
Sure.
And the classical music world.
Yes.
There is a specific set of stereotypes.
Yeah.
And, you know, plot tropes that happen a lot.
Unlike doctor or lawyer shows.
But I'm not saying that these other professions are not misrepresented
as
well.
No, I'm saying that they also have specific stereotypes and tropes too.
But
I hear you.
Yeah, it's a weird sort of chip on the shoulder sort of attitude.
Sure.
Like TV and movies, they love cops and doctors.
If you're a contemporary artist, equals you are a charlatan.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're an art dealer, you're slimy. If you're an artist, you're a phony. You're a fake. You're a grifter. And if you're in classical music, then you are
an uptight priest.
You're uptight. You walk a couple feet off the ground. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you think you don't stink. Mm-hmm. And so, I think even though they get cops and doctors wrong, they like cops and doctors.
Sure.
I think they hold a grudge against these other folks because they're doing something that either people don't get or they don't like much or they don't understand, and therefore
it's pointy-headed.
Who do you think you are?
Pointy-headed ivory tower types. Yes. Okay.
So anyway, she wrote an interesting piece about that. It's linked on her wall on Facebook. I don't know if her wall is public on Facebook. I assume it is because she is a journalist.
Well,
and part of being a journalist now is selling yourself.
I'm sure people could
to the world.
Google the article.
Yeah.
Why don't you spell her last name?
MIDGETTE.
Okay.
She's a great writer. She's a great critic. And she's my buddy from Roswell, New Mexico.
So you will be watching
Goddard High School.
You'll be watching Mozart in the Jungle through her eyes.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
I finished watching Born This Way.
Oh, okay.
That season ended.
How many episodes?
I don't know how many episodes they did. 6 or 8. It wasn't a long season.
Okay.
I think when you have a first, when you're trying to launch a reality show,
mm-hmm.
you don't want to be on the hook for too many of them.
Sure.
If the ratings sink.
Right.
And I have no idea what the ratings are like for this show. You know, it's on TLC or...
No, A&E.
A&E, one of them. And I don't know what constitutes success for a non-famous person reality show on a network like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much they have to get on their investment to make a season 2 of something, or how much buzz it has to get, or, you know, what demos have to watch it the right way.
If it's a show about ice truckers, apparently, they just keep coming back.
Well, yeah, that's... interesting. You know, that's an interesting premise. You know, super dangerous. Any super dangerous job is an interesting reality show. That's what The Deadliest Catch is all about. But a show that, like I said early on, it had a weird kind of footing at first, and it found its way in terms of tone. When I was concerned at first that it was going to be sort of like people being bitchy with each other.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It turned out to be very, very sweet and heartwarming. And actually, for me at least, because I'm an idiot, when it comes to people with Down syndrome, I don't know anyone and I don't know anything about it.
It was educational.
I learned things, that I didn't know. And so it ended, and it's adorable. And it's heartwarming. It reminds me a lot of I Am Jazz. I've said that before.
Right.
In terms of, here's a show about nice people that would be marginalized and are marginalized all over the world.
They would like you to know more about their lives.
About their lives. And so, obviously, there's an amount of course, fakery in any kind of reality show, and you've got, you know, these young 20-somethings with Down syndrome all sort of tossed together into a
but not fakery of the you didn't come to my fashion show.
No, not like that. But like, you know, suddenly they're all in dance class together.
Oh, right.
Gotcha. You know, well, that didn't happen of anyone's volition other than the producers saying, okay, you're all going to dance class. And so stuff like that is what I'm saying. This setups, it's not documentary.
Right.
These guys are not out making their own way in the world.
This isn't a Frederick Wiseman movie.
They cast the show and they brought these folks together.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that they did to cast the show was they brought in a girl, she's like 22 or so, from Colorado with her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And they were here in Los Angeles for the duration of the shoot. And the reason they came to Los Angeles, the girl, her name's Megan, she has this idea that she's going to be the first film executive with Down syndrome.
Hmm.
She wants to be a movie producer.
Okay.
I don't think she fully understands what it means to be a movie producer or how that works, but because she did also talk on this episode about moving to Los Angeles and buying a house. And her mother said, well, how are you going to do that? And she said, well, with my business. Now, she has a t-shirt and scarf business. She makes, hand makes things. And her mother says, well, you have $300. Do you know how much... what that means. That doesn't even pay our utility bills for the month. So, you know, that is a plan that isn't really going to work for you. So we're going to have to go home to Colorado. And we'll think more about it when we get home to Colorado. And it's actually really heartbreaking to watch her respond to the idea that, oh, we don't get to stay here forever. You know, And her mother saying, no, you know, I told you this was for a short time, and remember, and we're going to make these decisions together, and I'm going to help you, and you're going to help me. And it's like, the parents on this show are so good. They're so, they've been, lived with this for decades now. Mm-hmm. In the case of one of the young women, she's 32. Her parents have lived with this for 30 years. And they know all the beats. They know everything that they need to say and how to say it and what to do. And even when they don't know how to say it, they still say it better than basically anyone else could. Hmm. And it's all about, you know, watching people struggle to understand life as it happens to them. And some of them are pretty good at this, and some of them are less good at this. And I hope there's a season two, because now I like these kids, and they're, I mean, compared to me, I'm 51. They're all kids. I like these kids, and I want to see more. Like, and frankly, if they're going to make their dreams come true, being on TV makes you money. I want them all getting paid. I want the parents getting paid. I want the kids getting paid. I want everybody getting paid.
I don't know what the A&E money is.
Get that Nene Leakes money.
Yeah, that's not everybody.
It's not going to ever reach that kind of popularity if it does come back for another season.
Mm.
I know I just said Nene Leakes money, but I'm not an idiot. I know that's not going to happen. But it won't be a hugely successful show because it is kind-hearted.
Right.
Now, they're selling me through the ads on Born This Way for a new show
that's coming up. Brother.
I've been watching My 600-Pound Life, which I find fascinating, but also I find it completely exploitive. But they're starting a new show on A&E called Fit to Fat to Fit. I'm kind of obsessed with the fatness shows. Remember when remember how I used to watch Ruby?
Oh God, I forgot about Ruby. How is Ruby? Do we know?
Canceled.
Well,
and I don't know what happened to her, and I wish I did, because she was really nice. You know, I'm a fat man, but TV doesn't care about fat men like me.
No.
Fat men like me wind up in commercials playing the dad. You know, like, I'm just a normal fat guy, you know. TV likes 600 pounds,
yeah,
800 pounds, 1,000 pounds.
Or a 200-pound tumor.
Or a 200-pound tumor. Or people who are like 400 pounds who are on Biggest Loser. Because that feels like to America, like, oh, look, man, that can happen.
Yeah.
You can lose all that weight, you know. So anyway, this premise from Fit to Fat to Fit is personal trainer takes on a fat person. Personal trainer gains 60 pounds intentionally and then has to work it off with the client.
That just seems wrong in a lot of ways. First of all,
that seems wrong in a lot of ways. But here's why I'm totally going to watch. I hope it won't be too schmoopy and inspirational.
It will be.
If they're selling it through the audience who's watching Born This Way, then I worry that it might be, you know, full of cry.
There will be tears. There's always tears.
But here's what I want to watch. I want to watch those trainers get real fat.
Well, that is, I'm sure, the irresistible hook on this show, you know, because it's always about fat people being forced to lose weight.
I want to see body fascists get real chubby.
But you know they're going to do it all wrong. They're not going to, like, eat delicious treats. They're going to, like, have more protein shakes than they know how to burn off or something stupid like that. They're going to do it all wrong.
I want them to get hooked on
eclairs.
Like ho-hos. That's what I want. I'm
Popeye's fried chicken.
I'm watching it. I had this idea.
Yes.
That because American Idol is in its final season.
Right.
They are ending it.
Yes.
That because I used to write about American Idol for The Advocate. TheAdvocate.com. If you go to TheAdvocate.com, you will not find my old Idol columns.
Nor from Queer Sided, since everything we did for that site all
erased. This is what happens to journalism on the internet. It just vanishes.
Yeah.
For what, 3 or 4 seasons, I covered Idol?
Several, yeah.
For them, from like season
2, 5
to season 8 or 9, something like that.
Oh, was that late in the game?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It was the Taylor, I started with the Taylor Hicks season.
Okay. The Boogie.
Yes. And so, the funny thing about doing that for those years was that even though I had no investment in the music or who won or anything, I found myself really enjoying the process of taking this show and breaking it down every single week.
Well, yeah, because you were putting it in context of actual musical and artistic or cultural movements that the show either didn't understand or was ignoring. Like, I still remember in one of the early seasons, on the night where, you know, when they had Burt Bacharach week, which is hard enough for young singers to do those songs because they're musically difficult.
Yeah.
But then on the week where one of them gets eliminated, they all had to sing Do You Know the Way to San Jose, which is like, do you even know what that song's about? This is a fly-by-night singing competition, and you're singing a song about people who come to L.A. to become stars and fail.
That's fantastic. So anyway, and then they stopped paying me.
Yes.
To write about it. They stopped paying me in general. They stopped paying me overall. They just stopped paying.
Yes.
And I became the world's greatest repo man bill collector. Hounded them for a year.
Yes. For both of our money.
For both yours and my money. Got that money in little tiny bits at a time.
Yes.
And then they would call. I would call back, and I would call them back, and I'd say, thank you for your check for $250. You now owe me $2,475. When will I be receiving a check for $2,475? No answer. Oh, next week, maybe something will come. All right, let's see. Another check shows up. $100. Thank you for your check for $100. You now owe me $2,375. When can I expect a check for $2,375?
This is the only time I've ever known you to be good at math.
I did that for a year.
Yes.
I have a calculator. That's right here. True. Yes. It's in the bill box.
Yes, you do.
Texas Instruments. Calculator. I got that money.
You did.
And other people that I knew who used to write for them, they were like, they're paying you? And I'm like, damn right they're paying me, because I'm not letting up. And they're like, I gave up. And I said, because you're weak. Don't be weak. Get paid. I did. Anyway, quit writing about that for them. So now American Idol is back.
Yes.
Or rather, I'm back watching American Idol. I don't know how the ratings are after this 1 week of auditions. Maybe they're crappy and maybe no one cares.
Not great, I think.
But for at least now, I'm going to keep watching and see if they do anything in this final season to pull it out and go out with a bang instead of a whimper. What they need to do, this is my prescription.
Mm-hmm. Bring back Simon Cowell?
My understanding is that he's going to show up eventually for something.
Oh, okay, nice.
Yeah. So is Paula Abdul, so is Randy Jackson. Understanding is that they're coming back for an episode or later on in the process.
Kara.
Who?
Kara DeGuardi.
What was her deal?
She was like the other music woman on the panel.
Songwriter,
yeah.
Right.
Oh, Kara DeGuardi.
I remember her, yeah.
Remember the Ellen year?
Yeah. That was
bad.
So anyway.
And Dunkelman. They got to bring back Dunkelman.
Well, they showed a clip of Dunkelman.
I know.
In the first episode. I was like, you bring him back for something. We live in the world of Adele.
Right.
Currently. The biggest pop star in the world at this moment is a woman with a big voice.
Mm-hmm.
Not an indie person, not a rock person.
Right.
A traditional, big-voiced female singer.
Belter.
Who belts out power ballads.
Yeah.
American Idol started by crowning that type of singer.
Yeah.
You started with Kelly Clarkson.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got Carrie Underwood.
Mm-hmm. Are we putting Ruben Studdard in that category?
No, we are not. No, I hate to do this because you know who my favorite of all time is from American Idol.
Fantasia.
Fantasia is an R&B singer who has been niche marketed.
Yeah.
And she's doing fine. But she's not having hits and she's not part of the national music conversation.
No.
You know? But Kelly Clarkson and Carrie Underwood have become that next level kind of famous.
Yes.
Unlike anyone else who has been on American Idol as a winner. Now we've got Adam Lambert and to a much larger extent
Jennifer Hudson. Yeah, like Kelly Clarkson and
Carrie Underwood win.
Became the level of famous where eventually
that
they won an American Idol is this kind of like charming little footnote of their career and not the first thing out of your mouth.
Right. Everyone else, you think, oh, they were on American Idol.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's what they have to have already done. If they haven't done it yet, they need to do it now. Select the winner. Oh, come on. Like they haven't done that before.
I know.
Select the winner and make it a Kelly person.
And then take the top two and make a movie with them.
Well, yeah, that would be ideally they would make a spring break movie with the people who won first and second place.
Dancing on beach towels.
Dancing with beach towels.
Skirt of ties.
But yeah, they need a Kelly Clarkson.
Yeah.
And they need to have picked her already. I don't care what they say about America voted. That's not happening. That has, I don't think that has ever actually been a thing. I think that all those votes, someone got a little money. Like AT&T gets a little.
But do you think? Do you think the producers wanted the Boogie to beat Catherine McPhee?
I think they thought it might be a fun idea. Didn't we all think it would be a fun idea at that moment?
Wouldn't it be hilarious?
Wouldn't it be hilarious? Yeah. So, yeah. I don't think it's ever been a vote. I think it's always been, we just
pick. The fix has always been
in. We always just pick, yeah.
Probably.
Because, honestly, do you think they were going to let Justin Guarini win over Kevin Clarkson? Do you think there was anyone in that room that was thinking, oh, this might happen. He just might win. It's out of our hands. America decides. No. They said, that girl.
Yeah.
That girl right there.
I have to say.
Isn't she cute as a button? You adore her? You do adore her.
I picked her early that year.
Me too.
From the moment she appeared. Because this is back when we were watching with gays who thought that Justin Guarini was cute. And I'm like, no. Her.
Those were some weird gays that we were hanging with. You know who you are. Some of you are listening. The fix better be in, and it better be a good one, or they will go out with a 0-0.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what judges they bring back. I'm gonna watch.
Right.
So far, nothing interesting has happened.
I'll watch.
There have been a couple people who have shown up who have had really nice voices.
Yeah.
The lady with the baby, she's black and she has a big, giant afro. And she's got the most adorable baby in the world. And I don't remember her name. But she's got that knock down a building kind of voice.
Right.
Which is great. I love that. Almost like maybe 2 or 3bad auditions.
Yeah, they don't and really
no,
rock that
and
anymore.
No super crazy joke auditions.
No.
At least not last week.
Yeah, I think that maybe they phased that out or something. I haven't watched the show in years.
Like me neither. This is all new to me.
Yeah.
I don't even know who won the last like 3 or 4 seasons. I don't know their names at all.
Except for Philip Phillips.
Because that's such a crazy name.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, no, they were like...
I couldn't tell you what song he had.
That one that was in the Disney Bear movie.
Nope. Don't know the movie. Don't know the song.
You saw it with me.
What movie?
The Disney Nature, the Bears.
Oh, the Disney Nature movie the documentary. About the Bears with John C. Reilly narrated.
Yes.
Yeah.
At the very end, they play the Philip Phillips song. And it's a song you've heard in like a million commercials. We'll play it when we're done and be like, oh yeah, that one.
Okay. Well, whatever.
For the most part, no idea. And I couldn't tell. I've never seen a second of The Voice, and I don't know who won any of those.
Yeah. Okay, Jessica Jones episode. What are we on?
We just saw 7.
Things are getting really dark.
Yeah, this was the episode where she tries to get sent to Supermax Penitentiary.
Supermax. I like how many times she says Supermax in the episode. Yeah. I'm going to Supermax. I ain't.
Which in the world of Marvel is a thing. It is the prison where they put the metahumans. But it sounds like it should be a Costco. I get all my toiletries at Supermax.
Right. I have nothing actually to say about it this week because there was no big fight scene.
No, which is a good thing because you don't like the fight
scene. Yeah, the fight scenes take me out of the show.
It's interesting. I was just thinking about the whole narrative of how we have seen characters on TV who are dealing with PTSD in the aftermath of sexual assault. But this is an entire series about that, which is kind of fascinating.
Yeah, and now we're learning that... what's her face?
Trish's mother, Rebecca De Mornay,
provided Trish with her own set of trauma.
Yes,
which
was hinted at over the course of the show up till now. But now we meet her for the first time and see her stage mommery in full effect.
And when I saw her come on screen, I thought, I know that face. Who is that? Who's that actor? Who's playing the mom? And then I thought, Rebecca De Mornay. Is that who that is? Looked her up. Yes, that's who that is. And then we're on episode 5 of Making a Murderer.
And it's still infuriating.
It's still infuriating. prosecutorial misconduct. That's the phrase.
Oh yeah. But now we've gotten to the part where, and this isn't a spoiler, but we've gotten to the part where the filmmakers are suggesting who might have actually committed the murder.
Who's a possible?
Yeah. Possibly.
Yeah. Or who at very least is
should have been questioned more.
Should have been questioned more, or who's like operating under instruction.
Yeah.
You know, all this weird.
There's a lot of hinky going on.
Apparently on the jury was an international recording artist.
Yeah, I hope we get more information about
that. I don't know who that was.
Enya?
Well, it had to have been an American citizen.
Well, and who lived in Manitowoc County.
Yeah, and one who lived in that county.
Yeah.
Who?
I don't know.
Ted Nugent?
That's true, maybe.
Is he actually still an international recording artist? Because when I think international recording artist, my first thought is Celine Dion was on your jury?
Basha. Nana Mouskouri.
That lady from Swing Out Sister.
Maki Nomie.
I have two problems.
You have many problems.
With making a murderer.
Oh, yes, go on.
I am unhappy with the level of mockery going on out there on the internet about hairstyles and clothes and stuff like that.
There's a weird classist thing going around. It's like that. It's that People of Walmart thing.
Yes.
It's the people who chuckle over those Black Friday videos of people stomping on each other to get the cheap televisions.
Yeah.
It's very creepy. It's like there's some sort of Bread and Circuses parallel here that I'm not thinking of, but it's like, oh, let's watch the proles, you know, beat the crap out of each other from our lofty, you know, perch. It's gross.
Yeah, I don't like it. There's a Tumblr about making murderer hairstyles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there are also there's a lot of love for attorney Strang out there.
Well, because he's a dude.
Yes.
He's like the lone voice of reason in this entire, you know, situation.
I've also seen the word normcore applied.
Well, I mean, he's a Midwestern lawyer. He dresses like
a Midwestern lawyer.
Clothes from Costco, and that's fine.
No, but I'm not saying
he shouldn't have to be stylish.
But they're not saying like it's a bad thing. They're saying that he is aggressively, you know, regular guy.
Here's my other problem with making a murderer.
What's that?
Netflix is really hard to navigate.
It is not.
It is. With our remote, I never know how to make it go back.
Okay.
To make it stop.
If you would actually...
I hit pause, it doesn't pause for me.
If you would find our Netflix password, which I made the mistake of letting be into your
purview. No, I found it.
Okay, good.
Here, it's...
All right. No, we need to log in on our Apple TV. I think we'll get a smoother function than we do in our TiVo.
I wrote it down in my new little book.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Netflix used to be easy, and now it functions like a phone, and I don't understand phones either.
Well, here's the thing. We can either put it in our Apple TV, or, for that matter, we can use I'll put the Netflix app on your phone, and you can do it there and throw it to the Apple TV.
No, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
I had a friend.
Technology.
I had a friend tell me, hey, show me that picture you took, blah, 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 and I hit the wrong button. And he goes, no. Hit photos. He goes, it's so cute that you don't know what you're doing. I was like, shut up.
Grandpa.
I'm learning. I'm new to the smartphone. I'm still quite new. I've had it fewer than 6 months.
Just about, yes.
And I still have no idea what I'm doing.
You'll get it. You'll get it. I'm sure of this.
On an as-needed basis. But now I know to click on photos.
There we go.
And I want to find my photos.
Is that everything? Is that all the ground?
That's it.
Okay.
How long have we been going?
A little over an hour. We have a couple letters that I just sent you, that I sent you during your coughing break.
Here we go.
Oh, also a television-related thing. If you... our friend Louis Vertel, who recently was on the Linoleum Knife podcast of the cinema, gained a certain level of internet fame last year for snapping when he got the Daily Double right on Jeopardy. And the Republican Party decided that they were going to use his snap as the way to advertise their like Snapchat response to the State of the Union, which was a big, stupid mistake. And Louis has very entertainingly raked them over the coals for it. Go check out his Twitter account at Louis Vertel if you haven't seen it.
The subject line of this email is, "How you doing, Dave Way?" Dear Linoleum Knife, this is from Seth, by the way. I just wanted to say thank you for bringing a ray of happiness into my dull work Mondays. And now that I am unemployed, I'm sorry that you're unemployed. That sucks. And now that I am unemployed, my dull, not working Mondays. I debated whether or not to write movie-themed letter or television. I am opting for television, all because I love listening to Dave discuss Wendy Williams. If he just had a podcast called How Dave's Doing, I don't think any podcast could even match the awesomeness that show would contain. As you can probably tell by now, I'm a huge Wendy Williams fan and was even on her show, see attachment.
He sent us a photo of him in her studio audience and interacting.
Now, I wasn't just in the audience. I got to do a sound off on her Hot Topics segment. I cannot describe in words the thrill of the moment to say, "How you doing?" to the "How you doing?" queen herself. Unfortunately, I did not get to sound off on the drama of future Sierra and baby future. My topic was the breakup of Charlize Theron. I remember this guy. I just pulled the picture up.
It's all coming back to you now.
I remember this guy because I was like, "Get it, gay." she's excited, like she's happy to have him there. The bow tie on.
The breakup of Charlize.
Seth, we're friends now. You and me. Unfortunately, I did not get to sound off on the drama of future Sierra and baby future. My topic was the breakup of Charlize Theron and Sean Penn. I was on Team Charlize. How can you not be?
Duh.
Yeah. Some fun facts about going on the Wendy show. Number one, the amount of clapping you do can make your hands pretty raw. Two, during commercial... I have a trick for that, by the way.
What's that?
It's my opera clapping trick.
Which is?
You clap more at the opera than you do at Wendy Williams, let me tell you. I've never been on the Wendy Williams audience, but you have to clap forever at the opera. Because they just do, like, they bring out cast.
Oh, the curtain
cast,
call. I mean,
then the curtain call, then another curtain call. And it is sustained clapping for a very long time. And I've perfected this clap.
But who are you?
You can't see me, but I'm clapping.
But who are you doing that for? Because no one on stage can see you clapping.
Well, I don't want to stand up and not clap, and I don't want it when everyone else is around. And I don't want to walk out because that's rude, too.
So you're basically doing it for the benefit of the people in your immediate area.
Who would think
area.
That I was a bad person, yeah. Look. This is when I clap. When the soprano goes crazy and kills someone.
Mm-hmm.
And then yells about it for a long time. That's the greatest part of the opera.
Ululates.
And then at the end when she comes back out for her personal curtain call, then
she gets
a legit clap because these people are doing something superhuman that I can't do,
right?
That entertains me endlessly. So but otherwise, like when the chorus comes out, like you get the sorry chorus. I know you're important, but I'm saving my clap.
Yes. As it were.
Number two, during commercial breaks, Wendy sits on her purple chair or couch in awe that anybody bothered to show up. She seems pretty grateful for her audience.
Oh, well, sure.
All the time, yeah. Number three, they force you to dance during commercial breaks. And I got called out for not dancing after being there for over 3 hours. Number four, if they have an interview that they need to tape for another show, you are forced to stay.
Oof.
We got stuck with Holly Madison promoting her book Down the Rabbit Hole about the cult-like life of being one of Hugh Hefner's girlfriends. By the way, that book is so badly written. It's amazing. So besides all this Wendy stuff, I just wanted to say I really enjoy LKTV. I love hearing your commentaries about what's going on in television. Future favorite episode so far was the discussion of the Christmas melody with Bibbs. I was laughing so hard when he brought up the Back to the Future scene that should have been added. And from now on, there's a canister of Folgers crystals at our Christmas table every year. I'm also ecstatic that you have finally started talking about Getting On. My partner and I have been watching the show since it started 3 seasons ago. The way everyone is talking about Mr. Robot now is how I have been about Getting On. While all three of the leads are fantastic, for me, Niecy Nash is the MVP of the show. Not only is she hysterically funny, but she has the most compassion for the people she is actually taking care of. It's a wonderfully, fully realized, humane performance that I have ever seen from her. It's a shame the show only lasted 3 seasons because I've seen nothing this raw and hysterical on television before. Is it not coming back?
It's not coming back. It did the three and done.
Three and done. Yeah. That's a shame. But I'm still going to keep going.
Oh, of course, yeah. And that's one more season than Looking got, so, you know.
If you would like a suggestion from me for some television viewing, I'm going to recommend The Sound of Music Live from the BBC. Okay? Now, I have not been a fan of this material at all. I can't stand the film, and the NBC version was just plain silly. Mm. However, the Brits have finally figured out how to make this material work. From the sets to the costumes, everything felt very much of the era. The woman who played Maria was earthy and lovely, with some raw sexuality brimming beneath the surface.
So, not Carrie Underwood, then.
When she says she was raised on a mountain, you believe it. Also, Julian Ovidon, Blake from Downton Abbey.
Blake.
I don't know.
Oh, Mr. Blake. Yeah. Oh. The other guy who was in love with Mary when she was running around with Tony.
Oh, okay. Maybe the best Captain Von Trapp I've ever seen. He had great chemistry with Maria and even the children. They use actual video footage from the real onslaught of Austria, which makes the impending doom all the scarier.
Wow.
So keep up the great work, guys. I love Linoleum Knife and now LKTV so much I'm actually willing to pay for it once I start working again. Sincerely, Seth. P.S. Tell Alonzo I'm totally working on a What Did You Expect, Lady? T-shirt. What was that? What's that a reference to?
I was going to ask you. I don't remember what that's a reference to. I don't know.
Thank you, Seth.
Thank you.
Okay, one more letter, because these are long letters. I'm sorry. One more and we're done.
Okay.
Dear David Alonzo, I want to start off by encouraging you at some point to watch How to Get Away with Murder, a.k.a. The Roxanne Murder Show, with your host, Roxanne Murder. I'm not saying it's better than Breaking Bad. What I will say that is by season two, Walt was already irredeemable to me, and I watched the rest of Breaking Bad in quiet contemplation of his impending and deserved death. However, on the Roxanne Murder Show, everyone is terrible, and I love it. There's hardly a single decent human being in the whole cast, but I find every single one of them likable, and I can watch them rip each other a new a-hole every Thursday night for the rest of time. It's nutty, melodramatic greatness, and I love it. My main reason in emailing in is to ask either of you if you have ever watched anime. Not so much the televised anime, like series, not
I
really.
I think the only TV anime I've ever watched was Cowboy Bebop.
I remember on the very first podcast of the cinema that I ever listened to, you were responding to a letter about why you liked Spirited Away. Would you ever consider anime recommendations of the TV variety? Sure, why not? Recommend away. Personally, I like Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, the 2009 version, not the 2003.
Duly noted.
I didn't know there were two of them. Whether you watch it with the English voice actors or with the subtitles, it remains my favorite television show of all time.
Wow.
I cannot accurately put into words how great it is, from the characters to the writing to the artwork to the themes. It's just fantastic from start to finish.
Hmm.
Anyway, it's great to hear that you're enjoying the Great British Bake Off. I knew you'd like it. I personally could not get on board with the Great Holiday Baking Show, as the lack of Mel and Sue, combined with the American accents, just chased me back to the British version. Your own exploits in the kitchen were far more entertaining. I look forward to hearing more of them once I subscribe to your Patreon. If that's what you're using, that is what we're going
we
to
are.
Use. In the immortal words of Philip J. Fry, shut up and take my money. Gordon, P.S. It's not that relevant. It's not that relevant, but on that first podcast of the cinema, you were also struggling with the pronunciation of Domhnall Gleeson's
Donal.
Name.
Donal. I've learned it's Donal.
I'm generally not one of those people who tries to modify other people's behavior based on my own gripes and whims. However, this is an actual person's name, so I'll make an exception. His name is pronounced Donal,
yes,
or Donal. It's a dialect variation of the Gaelic name Donal, which is the Irish translation of Daniel. Can America please stop calling him Domhnall? Every time someone does, it makes me want to sob into a pint of Guinness. Well, I will now. Donal.
I've been calling him Donal for a while, because it's... I think...
Look, I more than you, I have not enjoyed saying Domhnall. Because it just doesn't flow out of my mouth very easily. But I haven't known any different.
Well, now he is famous enough that we all have to know the difference now.
Thank you, Gordon.
Thanks.
We're done.
Alrighty. So yeah, we'll be back this weekend with a new episode of the Podcast of the Cinema, where we will be doing our best of 2015 with some special guests. So that's going to be great, and you don't want to miss it. But in the meantime, of course, our extra episodes are still available. We are going to be making the Patreon happen very soon. So we're down to the last few LKTVs that you're getting gratis. So enjoy them and come along on the subscription train once that starts, we hope. In the meantime, check out our friends on
Cat
the internet.
Cat Stevens wrote a song about our subscription train.
Right on, subscription train. check out our friends on the internet. You know the usual. We say it every week.
Yes.
And we'll be back next week with more television. And until then, goodbye.